Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Oklahoma State primary day is less than 2 weeks away, June 28th, and voters will be deciding amongst a record number of candidates vying for a state legislative seat. There'll be several congressional districts in play, and here in Tulsa, a nonpartisan primary for Tulsa mayor. Today and tomorrow on Studio Tulsa, we'll talk to the two main candidates running to lead the city for the next 4 years. Tomorrow, we'll speak with Councilor G.T. Bynum. Today, my guest is incumbent Mayor Dewey Bartlett, Jr. Mayor Bartlett is seeking his third term as Tulsa mayor. He's formerly served as a city councilor from 1990 to 1994 and has served as mayor of the city of Tulsa since 2009. He joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Mayor Bartlett, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're seeking your third term as Tulsa mayor. Not many mayors run for a third term, so why decide to go ahead and do that? What's the priority for you?
Well, we have seen in numerous cities where when there's a continuity of leadership, both in the political as well as in the business environment, that good things happen. We've had great success. In my first term, I said I would be the job gettingest mayor this city's ever seen, and we accomplished that. We're still accomplishing that. Second term, I said that we needed a dedicated sales tax that would support significant numbers of new firefighters and new police officers, and we accomplished that within the parameters that I stated, that it be part of a public safety plan for the very first time, but also that it be without a tax increase. We accomplished that. I mean, with 75% of the public saying that's a great idea, that's pretty good. So moving forward with those, implementing those programs, economic development, public safety, the next term of office, what I will focus on is tying education to economic development and giving high school students a real opportunity for a career choice. Right now, those students are normally told that they must have a college degree or something equivalent in order to be successful. And I feel that that's obviously a very, very good goal. But what about those that aren't able to do that? What are we giving those students? Well, in my view, what we are doing now in the city of Tulsa, what we've started is an aerospace academy that's a perfect example where we have juniors and seniors in high school are completing their high school career at one of our Votech schools. And they will be exposed to a variety of career choices, jobs, everything from being a mechanic to being an airplane pilot to being an aeronautical engineer. All of these things they'll be exposed to. So they can then graduate and say, well, I've been exposed to this. I know what this is all about. Mechanics are great, but I think I want to be an engineer. So they can make that choice and do it because it's something that they want to do, not something that's being crammed down their throat. That, to me, is a very, very important goal, and it's my goal that every high school within the city limits of the city of Tulsa must have an academy that does expose students to whatever is to be offered, whether it's mechanics, banking, computer programming, whether it's engineering. If we have those type of activities throughout our school system, can you imagine the quality of the student?
So you're talking about an alternative education process, an alternative way to gain employment into professional fields.
Yes, but it would be done inside the current educational environment. So no. they would still have a high school diploma. Remember way back when it used to be where high school students would have a home ec class or a shop class, woodworking or...
Each school had their own Votech programs. A lot of times those fields are gone now. I remember printing class.
There you go.
You know, I mean, nobody prints anymore.
They don't, but they use computers.
Right.
So computer-generated journalism.
Okay.
Perhaps that could be an academy. We've seen the success that those academies have had in other cities where an existing high school, for example, in Long Beach, California, the worst performing high school of the eight in the city, 61% graduation rate, 61%. The academy, 400 students in it, and this is a 2,500-student high school. There's an academy in it that dealt with architecture, construction, and engineering. Those 400 students, graduation rate was 99%. Mm. It's incredible. That's what I want to achieve. I want to give a student a pipeline of opportunity to where he or she will have the ability to make a choice on what interests them and what career path they might want to take in order to be a success.
We know you and the other candidates have been talking a lot about education, but really the city of Tulsa doesn't have a whole lot to do with education. How can you ingratiate the city into the educational process with TPS and other schools within the city limits of Tulsa to offer these academies?
Well, we've already done it. That's what sets me apart, because I've done it. I've done it both with aeronautics, with aviation, between the two or three of our public high schools in the city of Tulsa and our Votech school. I've done it with Union High School and the ability to have a off-site academy to learn how to be an automobile mechanic.
So what is the city contributing to that? Because I think of the Board of Education's of those various school districts doing that. I mm-hmm. think of Votech doing that, a
right.
state function. But what is the city adding to those academies?
Well, we have, in that case, we have an employee that's a part-time instructor for our Votech school, for the Votech system. And he is able to give them 2 or 3 hours a day in the afternoon where he teaches them how to be a mechanic, what it's all about. And we've done it now for 2 years. It's now starting to catch on to be very popular. We started out with about 10 to 12 students. Next year, we have 30 signed up. So it's the type of situation where we are reacting to what a student, what their interests are, what they want to do, what they feel that they're capable and interested in accomplishing. We had one student last year that decided that after completing his education, he is, as all of them do, they receive a certificate, a basic mechanics certification. He wanted to go to college. The family couldn't do it. He was the first one of his immediate family to graduate from high school. So he went to the University of Oklahoma, went to Norman, went to a Ford dealer, showed him his certification. They hired him on the spot as a part-time mechanic for $18 an hour. He told them he wanted to be an engineer. He wanted to go to engineering school but didn't have any money. They agreed to help pay his tuition, and so he now has just completed his sophomore year at the University of Oklahoma majoring in mechanical engineering. His mother, I met, burst into tears because she knew that her son was going to be successful. He had a career path, which would not have been available to him if he had not had the opportunity to enroll in that class to learn how to be a mechanic.
So the city's going to offer personnel at times to help supplement what's going on in the schools?
If it works, if it's possible. I think it's what we have done with the Aeronautic Aviation Facility. We've got the superintendents together of the various high schools as well as with our Votech school, Dr. Steve Target. We got them all together, and we said, here's what we think is necessary for the economic vitality of our city. We need more trained and trainable people to come out of our educational system. And I suggested, let's focus on aviation because that is a huge employer in our city, and we have a lot of companies involved with it. So took a couple of years. We had tours of various facilities where we saw the success of this type of approach in other cities, and we implemented it. And we now will be seeing students that will graduate from high school with that type of experience, but they will have also had an opportunity to work next to a person that is actually working on or evaluating or doing the engineering, whatever it is, but they've seen it, not just heard about it, but they haven't just read about it, but they've actually seen it in action and understand it, what it's all about. They also have their leg up on an opportunity to get a summer job and or an internship, get a job.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's change the subject a little bit to the second half of this education, economic development. Let's look at economic development. Mm-hmm. When you look at our city, I think our entrepreneurs are creating lots of small businesses, a lot of boutique businesses around the Brady District, around downtown, and in emerging areas like the Pearl District and other places around the city. But what are you doing and what is the city doing to attract the large employers, which are very difficult to get, but they're so important to create the demand for all these explosion of small businesses that are taking place?
Well, we do. We show up. And I understand economic development in business because that's what I've done for 30-some years in the oil and gas industry as well as in real estate as well as in ranching and farming. I have a pecan farm, planted 1,700 pecan trees, so I know the value of hard work and labor. I guarantee you that. I mean it very sincerely, showing up, being able to understand and talk to the other businesses either in-state or out-of-state or even out of the country. I do a significant amount of travel for economic development purposes, and I've developed these relationships with companies like Mitsubishi and Lufthansa on an international market. I developed a lot of relationships with the equity providers of the oil and gas industry. do you realize that even though the oil and gas industry is having a difficult time at this point, we in Tulsa, there are right now in excess of 25 new startup companies that their sole purpose is operating and discovering and acquiring oil and natural gas properties, 25 of them. And they have $5 billion, and that's billion with a B, billion dollars of equity money behind them that are supporting that. And they're located in Tulsa, not in Houston, not in Dallas, not in Denver, but in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because they know, because they've heard it from me, they know that there's an atmosphere in Tulsa that encourages oil and gas, encourages startups, and certainly having a mayor that's the only mayor of a major city that has oil and gas in her background, that doesn't hurt.
What about the Peoria Mohawk area, which was just approved in the Vision Renewal, a site ready-made for a large employer? How are you going to market that now that that property is, you've got the start and you got the utilities money set aside to have it ready for a startup?
Well, first of all, we have to prepare it because right now it's a big tract of land with a lot of woods on it and hills and a lot of trash and debris.
Yeah, but the money is there.
Money's there. It will be there.
Yeah.
And we're now deciding the prioritization of how we get that money. But once we make that decision, which will be done fairly soon, we then will prepare the site. We'll get it ready. We'll get all the utilities brought up to it so it will be ready. We've had an opportunity already to talk about it. I did last year when I was at a major air show. They were interested. This one particular company that I met in England, they were very interested in developing an area where the immediate neighborhoods were having some very difficult economic times. And I said, well, I've got a place for you. And so I mentioned that particular location because I knew that there was a group of people acquiring the land for that purpose. So they were interested, and they've actually been here, and they've looked at it. Haven't made a decision yet, but we'll see what happens. But it's understanding the significance of that and being able to talk business and talk about it in a way that I know exactly what they need and understand. And then on top of that, I say, by the way, we have an aviation aerospace academy. And they went, really? What's that all about? Well, we've got a bunch of high school kids that they have a real interest in aviation and aerospace, and by the way, they're going to graduate 20 of them here in a couple of weeks or a couple of months or whenever it is, and that is going to be your pipeline to supply your needs for future employees. Oh, really? Wow, that's different. No one else is doing that. So, yeah, well, we're in Tulsa. Tulsa is a very unique city because we were really founded upon private sector, doing business, entrepreneurship. That's what we've done forever, and we continue to do it, and that's why I focused on bringing all of these groups together, because I know the entrepreneurial spirit is alive and well in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
My guest today is Mayor Dewey Bartlett. He's seeking his third term as Tulsa mayor, running for re-election on June 28th. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Let's talk about budget priorities for the coming year. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a tight budget year.
Oh, yeah.
Sales tax projections are not being met at this particular point.
That's
coming
correct.
Under estimates. What are your priorities for protecting in the budget? What can you do to sort of alleviate the situation, considering that the city is pretty hamstrung on depending on sales tax revenue for an awful lot of its revenue?
Well, the good news is that when I became mayor the very first time, 6-7 years ago in 2010, we were spending money at the rate that we were going to be out of cash within 6 months, 5 or 6 months. So we were in a very, very precarious situation economically. So we were able to acquire the services of a company called KPMG, did a top-to-bottom evaluation on how to make our city run more efficiently. We've accomplished a lot of what they have stated we should do, and we've saved about $25 million easily because of that. If we would not have done that, the budget that I proposed to the council, delivered to the council this year and the one last year, each one of them would have seen very significant layoffs, extremely significant layoffs. But we didn't have to do that because we had prepared ourselves to absorb and react to a financial softness, which we're experiencing right now. You've seen what has happened in Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma, the difficulty they had in their budget. Oklahoma City, unfortunately, they're having a very difficult time as well. Their sales tax receipts are coming in almost twice as bad as ours, the lack of. They're hitting in excess 7% below what they had last year. Ours are about 3% now. So we proposed a budget that did not have any significant layoffs. I think there might be one. But we also proposed that we dedicate $3.2 million of our budget to be put into our rainy day fund just to anticipate if things do get worse or get bad, then we at least have $3.2 million to use for balancing the budget purposes and for helping us get through a problem. The city council hadn't made their decision yet whether they will do that. I strongly encourage them to do that, and I think if they do something differently, they'd be very short-sighted, because here we have an opportunity to have a good budget. We're not expending money unnecessarily, but we still have $3.2 million that we can put in a savings account that we can use for a rainy day.
Wouldn't a drop in revenues maybe say that's the time to use that money?
Could be, but if we don't put the money in there, if we spend it on other things that, in my view, might not be prudent, then I think we've made a bad decision. So hopefully the council will understand this and react accordingly.
Let me talk about, you've talked a little bit about being an ambassador for the city and the way you've talked about economic development. Mm-hmm. The upkeep of the city, and this gets to things like mowing cycles, which I understand are being preserved in the budget, but things like lights on the expressway, you know, mm-hmm. even if it's a combination of ODOT and the city on keeping the lights on, doesn't it set a bad example when you're driving through Tulsa in the late evening and you're driving through a dark expressway in the city?
No question. It really is. But we've had obviously it's been a huge problem with people stealing the wire. We have set into place. We don't use copper wire anymore. We use aluminum wire. And so that has cut back on the people wanting to steal the wire because they can't sell aluminum wire. There's no market in it. We've also improved the way that we keep people from breaking into the light poles. But what a lot of people don't realize is that several of the expressways are not the responsibility of the city of Tulsa. It's the Oklahoma Department of Transportation. So we can't help there other than complain about it.
Do you complain about it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We let them know. I said, hey, and they know it, but it takes a while for them to react. Just the city of Tulsa alone, we've had to spend $2 million to buy new wire. And initially, we would replace the copper wire that was stolen with copper wire. And we found out very quickly that it didn't take just 2 or 3 days or even less than a week that people come back and they'd steal it again, the new wire. So we stopped doing that. But we had to order the wire, and it does take time to get all that done, had to get bids and blah, blah, blah.
What does that say about the city that, you know, we know this is a problem, yet thieves are still able to steal the wire?
They have a market for it. Oklahoma does have good laws, finally, where things have to be done that identify a person bringing in wire, for example, big bundles of wire. So what they now do, they go out of state. We're not that far from Kansas or Missouri or Arkansas. And so they go there. And they can give their driver's license and all sorts of things, but it's in another state, so they don't care. So they can sell it there.
Let's talk about the Arkansas River is a big focus in the Vision Renewal.
Yes.
You're going to have two low water dams. You're going to have the gathering place come online in this next term.
Mm-hmm.
What is your overall vision for the Arkansas River? Of course, there's great debates over whether to sell land in Helmerich Park for, you know, a development mm-hmm. right there at that corner at the volleyball courts. Give us a sense of what your vision for the river is. I know you're going to have to work with others and developing that overall vision, but what is your vision?
Well, we have 22 miles of riverbanks in the city limits of Tulsa. And a significant amount of that is not being used. It's a park or just raw land, a little bit of everything. I see development is not necessarily right next to the river. It can be in some cases, and I think in some cases it's appropriate. But whatever we do, we have to do it in a very responsible way and one that doesn't have a negative impact certainly on the environment, but also doesn't have a negative impact upon the use or viability of the land. If access to river is negated, then that's not a good thing. If we have a situation where can't see the river, well, that's a problem. But I do see opportunities that is off of the river. And in some parts of Tulsa where on top of a hill, that might be several blocks or at least a few blocks away from the river, there could be a tremendous view of the river itself, both upstream and downstream. And then that view plus the buildings that are in back of it, all the different things, it is a very attractive place to be. Those areas could be open for development. And obviously they would have pretty much negligible impact upon the river itself or the river banks or river parks that's part of that process. We've seen numerous cities throughout the country where the cities have a big river, but they develop them right up the water's edge, and there might be a walkway of some kind, but that's it. And in some cases, it's privately owned. You can't go there. We don't want to do that. Absolutely not. I think one of the great things we have is we have so much parkland available. And in some cases, dry riverbed is really pretty attractive. And it's a very interesting place. A lot of wildlife can be watched and seen. And I think a lot of universities still like to see that type of area. And they can do a lot of work and see what that's all about. Mm-hmm. So providing those kind of opportunities and access to it from an educational standpoint, I think it's very appropriate. From an environmental standpoint, absolutely.
And it seems like the Helmrich Park proposal to build a commercial development there is sort of on the back burner at this point. There was a lot of questions over whether it needed to go through the council or the Public Facilities Trust could sell the land. But there were also questions over selling that vital piece of property for what was a lot of people consider below market prices. Is that needed for development along the river, or should we look for somebody who's going to really make a quality investment in the city when they're developing anywhere around the river?
Well, certainly there would be an argument about whether it's a quality developer or not. I think a lot of things that I've seen that they were going to do is very high quality, and they were certainly planting a significant number of trees or putting in berms or doing a lot of things, providing access to the river, places where people could park and then go use the river for whatever purpose. They agreed to put in additional volleyball courts, all sorts of things, just a variety of opportunities. And unfortunately, a lot of people, even though this started about 2 years ago or so, a lot of people of recent thought this was a bad idea. I think that we have to do it responsibly, but we have to do it in a way that does bring sufficient number of people together to where they don't just have a knee-jerk reaction of, yeah, we've got to develop this, or yeah, we can't have any development at all. There has to be a consensus on that, I believe, at least in certain parts of the river. If we're going to spend several hundred million dollars in putting in low-water dams, stabilizing the river bank, spending a huge amount of money privately for the gathering place, several hundred million for the new casino that's being added to the new hotel, et cetera, at the casino. All of that is focused on the river. And in my opinion, if we add development to those areas, if it does make good sense, it doesn't have to be financial sense, but we certainly don't want to overstay our welcome. We don't want to put the river in a bad place where it can't be seen in its somewhat natural state now. Then we made a mistake. We can't do that. We just have to be sensible about it.
One other question has to do with working with the county. Continues to be disputes over jail operations. And there's also still talk about, you know, consolidation of parks between the city mm-hmm. and the county. What is your view on being able to work with the county?
Oh, we've had tremendous success in working with the county. We have things like the library system, the city-county health department, all that. We've made some good changes in it, and that's very good. Over the last several years, we've worked in several things where the city and the county had duplicating services, whether it's printing or medical services for their and our employees, things like that. We decided to let's work together and just do it at one place or do it with one type of activity instead of duplicating each other, because at the end of the day, we're working for the same taxpayers. So we've had a very, very good success in it. We're now spending a significant amount of time trying to consolidate our city and county parks department. And I know that one day that will be accomplished, and I think sooner than later. I really do. Because, again, we're working for the same taxpayers.
Is that a priority for you if
Absolutely.
You're reelected?
Absolutely. And I think it's a smart thing to do. The public doesn't care who owns the park. They just want a park. And the city of Tulsa has over 100 of them in different sizes. The county has quite a few less. But they have some big ones, La Fortune Park, for example. Obviously, we don't want to have a bad situation there. So everybody has the best intentions, and I think that we will get to a point to where we announce a very, very good system. Now, we do have a situation, obviously, with the jail, and I'm one of seven trustees, and the city of Tulsa has always had a good, reasonable deal with the county. At one point, many years ago, we had two jails. The city and the county each had a jail. So it made no sense to do that. So we made an agreement that let's build a new jail, and part of it will be the city will be able to house their prisoners, their municipal prisoners, at the county jail for a fair price. We have an average of about 30 to 35 prisoners a day in a jail that holds 1,700-plus people. The city of Tulsa agreed, and the county agreed, to pass a tax to pay for the operation, the building and operation of the jail. The citizens of Tulsa presently pay about $17 million on every year towards the operation of the jail. Now, what the complaint is about is that I start asking questions. Why are we spending so much money in the jail on employees that have nothing to do with the operation of the jail? Why are we buying so many trucks that have nothing to do with the operation of the jail? Why are we spending all this money over and above the $16, $17 million that has nothing to do with the operation of the jail? I think that if we were to have the jail managed better, the taxpayers' money would be expended more properly. I've asked for a numerous number of audits to be done to look at the management of it and determine how to manage it better. I feel that when someone from the county says that they think that we need to pay $2.5 to $3.5 million more on an annual basis, I think, no, we're already spending $800,000 a year paying for the 35 prisoners that we are already paying the highest rate that they charge. I don't feel it's proper to ask for more money. And so I've disagreed with that. And then some people say, well, you're not getting along with the county. No, I get along with the county fine. I'm just looking out for the city of Tulsa taxpayers, and I refuse to roll over simply because I'm being criticized. I think my position is very strong. I'm working for the taxpayers, and I think that we're paying more than enough money as it is.
All right. Well, we're out of time, unfortunately. So I'm going to give you a closing statement. Why should Tulsa voters choose you again on June 28th?
Well, I obviously have the six-plus years experience of having a very successful operation of our city. We've worked through some very, very difficult times economically. We had a very difficult beginning period of time, but now we're positioned where we can absorb a financial hit much better than other cities in our state, and certainly much better than the state of Oklahoma. We've developed tremendous relationships that have resulted in good economic growth, a lot of jobs, tens of thousands of jobs since I've been mayor that I've had a very direct involvement with. Now we focus on education. We've had good success in that already, and we've done great things like managing our city better. When I became mayor, we had about 4,200, 4,300 employees. Now we have 3,600. We're still providing relatively similar services, but we're working the city better, much more efficiently, and living within our means, just like everybody that's listening here does. We're doing the same thing. I really do appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I just ask the voters to please vote for Dewey Bartlett on June 28th for mayor of the great city of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
All right. Mayor Bartlett, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
The incumbent mayor of the city of Tulsa, Dewey Bartlett Jr., speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Mayor Bartlett is seeking his third term as Tulsa mayor. He'll go before Tulsa voters on June 28th. If you missed a portion of today's conversation, you can listen online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Tomorrow we'll be speaking with his primary challenger, Counselor for District 9, G.T. Bynum. That's tomorrow on Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.